Good morning, everyone, and hello from Dallas. I'm Rosalind Jackson with Vote Solar here in Texas for this year's Solar Power International, the country's largest solar conference. It has been an incredibly busy start to the week. It's got tens of thousands of members of the global solar industry here sharing ideas, showcasing technology and business development. And I'm very happy to have six of the foremost executives in the arena joining us on this call to share their perspectives on highlights, news, and trends coming out of this year's conference. So just briefly, we'll start with an introduction from each and a few words, and then we'll open it up for questions from you all. Looking forward to that. Up first, we have Lyndon Rives, CEO of SolarCity, the national leader in solar power system design and finance for homeowners and other energy consumers. Lyndon, what are you seeing as some of the most important news coming out of the conference this year?
You know, what I've picked up is that there's actually still tremendous momentum in the solar industry. Growth is continuing. There has been some backlash of the cylinder medium, but that's just one company. If you look at the companies here, everybody's doing extremely well. They're hiring. SolarCity alone has hired 500 people per year the last 2 years. So we're just under 1,300 employees. So the notion of no job growth in the solar industry is totally fake. The job growth is tremendous, and actually I'm quite excited about the rest of the year in 2013.
Great, thank you. Next, we have Arno Harris, who's CEO of Recurrent Energy, leading developer of solar power projects for utilities and larger energy customers. Arno, what do you consider some of the more pressing issues we're facing here as an industry as we gather in Dallas?
Well, good morning, everyone. I think the thing that I've been watching with a lot of attention is just there have been rumors swirling for the past couple of weeks about an impending trade action against China coming from the solar industry. We don't have to wonder anymore where that's coming from. The notices are going out this morning that Solar World is going to be joining a petition to the Trade Commission and the Department of Commerce, and that petition is going to allege that China is unfairly subsidizing its solar manufacturers and dumping solar modules on the global market. You know, a successful petition would be the first step towards imposing tariffs on solar panels imported from China. And, you know, I think it's important to state really plainly what's really going on here. A group of manufacturers, or at least one manufacturer we know of, you know, who can't compete with today's solar panel prices is basically looking to, you know, put in place trade barriers to make the U.S. a safe market for their own more expensive solar panels. You know, bottom line, the result of that kind of action is really, you know, not good. It prevents Americans from getting access to low-cost solar panels and low-cost solar electricity. And it's clearly a tactic that's just in the narrow self-interest of the manufacturers joining the petition. It's not in any way in the interest of American consumers. It's not in the interest of ratepayers. And it's certainly not in the interest of slowing global climate change. I think all of us would agree the best thing this industry can do is to really drive down the cost of solar. And the industry has been having tremendous success in that regard with manufacturing that's, you know, global in the U.S., in Europe, in China, yes, in Malaysia, the Philippines, and beyond. And as a result of that expansion and the, you know, ever-increasing improvement in costs, the industry has, since 2008, has taken almost 75% of the cost out of silicon-based solar panels. And, you know, it's simple economics. The less solar power costs, the more favorably it compares to conventional power, the more attractive it becomes to utilities, and the more demand grows. And that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, today's low-cost solar panels are completely overturning, I think, some of the old notions about the limits of solar power and what it can do. And we're seeing solar become a real part of today's conventional energy market. Not to go on too long, but I think, you know, aside from, you know, kind of the reasons why we shouldn't, you know, why we don't want to see this kind of development, you know, I think there's some pretty big observations that undermine the whole blame China argument. you know, first is just the information that came out earlier this year from SEIA that the U.S. solar industry had a positive trade flow of almost $2 billion. It was a net exporter to China, actually, of more than $240 million. In other words, you know, U.S. solar companies are basically selling more equipment to China than Chinese companies are allegedly dumping here. As Lyndon said, the industry is thriving, and we're continuing to hire, so I don't see that there's, you know, really the obvious harm that I think the petition would allege. And second, I think all you have to do is look at the stock market and look at solar stocks out there to recognize that there isn't some fundamental advantage enjoyed by Chinese companies that, you know, would lead you to think there's an unfair subsidy occurring at a grand scale. Chinese companies are struggling with today's low prices for solar panels just as much as other companies are. And I think at the end of the day, you know, my hope is that this all adds up to nothing and that we recognize that starting a trade war over solar panels would and that instead we should just continue to focus on growing demand, driving out costs, and really continuing to make solar driving a new era of low-cost, truly ubiquitous solar power.
Thanks, Arno. An important issue, a new development, and hopefully a topic that we'll be able to talk about more in the call. Up next, with another global perspective on cost, we have Julie Blunden, Executive Vice President of Public Policy and Corporate Communications for SunPower Corporation, which designs, manufactures, and delivers highest efficiency solar panels available today. So, Julie, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Roz. So I think looking at the markets around the world, it's a very dynamic time. Things have moved from being a supply-driven market to demand-driven market. And one of the things that we are really pleased to see is a continued interest in evolving technology for lower cost and better performance. We are spending time at this show to unveil two important product advancements, one for the smaller scale residential commercial market and another for the utility and power plant market. The second of those is really the market that's going to drive very strong growth in the U.S. market over the next several years. And one of the questions is, you know, how do you look at the opportunities as we go from a more stable market over the next couple of years to a real advancing and growing market in 2014 and beyond? And one of the things we're going to need to do as an industry is think about how to access the power plant market as it grows around the world. As we've looked at the technology options, we take our high-efficiency cell. We're unveiling what we're calling the C7 tracker. It's at our booth. It's worth going to take a look at. It's a 7x concentrator that basically means instead of building 7 gigawatts fab for 7 gigawatts of power plants, we can build a 1 gigawatt fab and serve 7 gigawatts of power plants. That's an important advancement, and it'll give us the opportunity to offer power plant customers a lower levelized cost of energy than what we can do today on power plants like what we're building right now in San Luis Obispo County for 250 megawatts for PG&E. So I think that's important to recognize that in a time of a lot of turmoil and focus on market dynamics, there's actually a lot of innovation and technology improvement that's happening in the market, and encourage folks to take the opportunity to go look at that in the booth today. The other one is our AC panel that came out. We have a lot of folks that have been working in the microinverter markets. We have been looking at that market and deeply investigating and quality testing options over the past 2 years. It took us a long time to feel comfortable offering an AC panel with a 25-year warranty. We're now doing that. We think that's incredibly important in terms of offering customers the broadest customer base, the broadest number of options for how to build a solar system on the roof. We want to make sure that as we move forward, we have both utility and residential, commercial, and public sector customers that have confidence in the technology that they're buying from solar companies. And in a time where we're seeing, you know, changes in the solar industry, some companies will leave the market. We think the confidence that we can say we're offering 25-year warranties and demonstrated performance will become even more important. So I think as we have a lot of activity and conversation around what's happening in the market, I'd ask people to spend a few minutes also paying attention to what's happening from a pure technology perspective, because there's a lot of good news out there.
Great. Thank you, Julie. Up next, we have Lynn Juritz, who's president and co-founder of Sunrun. They're a pioneering provider of the third-party-owned solar for homeowners. Lynn, what's new from your perspective?
Thanks, and welcome from Dallas. I'm going to focus a lot of my comments on the residential solar sector, which is a big and important piece of the industry. It's about 30% of solar deployed in the U.S., and it's really a source of a lot of innovation and growth. I'm going to switch gears a little bit away from some of the comments on technology and the innovations that Julie talked about to talk a little bit about business model innovation, which I think is one area that we're really leading on here in the U.S. And the example I'll use is about 4 years ago, my company pioneered a offering called Solar as a Service or Solar Leasing for consumers. And what that means is that we actually pay to have a solar system installed on people's rooftops and take care of it, manage it, and then just sell the homeowner electricity at a fixed price. So what that does is it allows the consumer to not have to pay anything up front to get solar and actually lock in a rate for the solar power that's equal or less cost than what they're currently paying their utility provider. And a lot of people don't know how widespread and affordable this is. My company and others on the call, we're operating in, 10 to 15 states. And we today can actually sell solar electricity for less money than about $9 to $10 billion of annual power sold to consumers per year. So it's meaningful, and it's something that consumers are really asking for. I think one other point to make on some of the market growth there, if you look in the California market, this model of solar leasing and solar service has really become the dominant way consumers are adopting solar. So one of the things we discovered out at the show this week is that solar leasing has actually become the dominant way it's deployed at 59% of the market in the third quarter. And that has actually grown about 67% quarter over quarter. So consumers are really adopting this, and it's very bipartisan. I wanted to turn to just one other way that we could really take the cost down to consumers and make it affordable. And the biggest opportunity here is around local permitting, which I know really isn't a super sexy topic, but is a very important one. The variation in cost in local permitting for solar systems adds about $2,000 in unnecessary cost to each system. And so if you look across the whole industry, that's about $1 billion that we could just wipe out. And we're working with the DOE on streamlining this and putting some standards together. But if we were able to solve that in the U.S., I think we would really be the worldwide leader in innovation in consumer solar. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. We have another company focused on residential solar up next. Danny Kennedy is founder and president of Sungevity, a company that uses innovative web-based platform and, again, lease financing to provide solar to homeowners. Danny, what would you like to share?
Thanks for joining us to talk about SPI. I guess I want to talk about jobs. Sungevity is the company I started, and like Sunrun Solar City, we focus on the residential space, providing solar as a service with a solar lease. And people love it. It saves them money, and it creates jobs in their community as well as with our companies. I think the numbers that are salient for the journalists on this call that have been released at this Solar Power International Conference by the Solar Foundation from a solar job census that showed that the solar industry grew 7% in employment over the 12 months from August 2010 to August 2011. So, 7% growth in a category is probably the fastest of a substantial economic sector in the American economy that compares to 0.7% job growth in the general economy. We all know that we've had a sort of dead cat bounce recovery. Well, that's shown in the jobs. That's why people are occupying Wall Street. That's why there's 10% unemployment. And here we are in the solar industry creating the jobs that are needed out there in middle America. The fossil fuel industry just as a point of comparison, the fossil fuel electricity generating sector has shed 2% of their jobs during the same 12-month period. And we all know that the big oil and gas guys have shed more than that. They've shed something like 11,000 jobs since 2005. So we're creating jobs gangbusters, and yet we're getting pilloried in the press. I think that needs to be sort of called out. We're creating savings for consumers in middle America, and we're innovating as American businesses and entrepreneurs are meant to do. So it's a sort of funny upside-down world these days. The jobs numbers, you know, get borne out not just as numbers but as people and human stories. Just, you know, for longevity to finish, I want to share that we've grown from 100 to 300 staff this year. You know, we're a highly efficient business that sells solar over the internet and uses subcontractors. So as well as the 300 staff in Oakland, California, a relatively recessed city, we employ hundreds of subcontractors around the country doing our installations, and we're employing particularly electricians who are otherwise in California, for example, 40% on the bench these days. We're giving them good new work in the green economy. And, you know, we're taking in people from displaced industries like retail and the military veterans coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. These are the characters that we're giving jobs to in their droves. Again, 7% growth year on year. We're now 100,000 strong as an industry. That's more people work in the solar industry in America than in coal mining or work in steel production in America. We're now bigger than those industries, and it's a good time to be in solar.
Here, I'm very glad to have a solar job myself. Last but certainly not least, we have Dan Sugar, who is CEO of Solari Corporation. They are an American manufacturer of innovative solar modules. Dan, you've been at the frontier of American solar power for a couple decades now. What's the buzz coming out of this year's SPI?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I'd like to build on the comments of the other speakers. The Lynn and Danny reviewed the really exciting growth in the residential area, and Julie Blunden touched on the growth in the utility. I think I want to pick up on the utility because it's really where you know, some of the larger and, you know, more exciting progress has been made on the cost of delivered solar power at this, you know, scale. So if you just go back to sort of pre-2005, the largest solar plants in the world were single-digit megawatts, you know, 1, 2, 3 megawatts. And then we went to double-digit megawatts. Now we're in the sort of triple-digit megawatts. So, you know, power plants are being built, you know, 200, 300, 500 megawatts of scale. These are really big plants. And the, you know, they're... The sort of new news is that solar is, you know, competing head-to-head with conventional polluting power generation resources. Today, solar is less expensive than power from a new nuclear power plant, and obviously much lower risk. And so there are, I looked, over 8 gigawatts of power contracted for just in California, and about half of that power is contracted below the cost of what it would be to buy power from a new gas plant, new gas-fired power generation plant. And so we're seeing, in addition to growth in the residential sector, you know, incredibly strong growth in the commercial sector. And what I'm seeing new at this conference is just utilities really looking at this as, you know, a solution for peak power to be provided during the day. The Sierra Club and others have pretty much successfully killed new coal to come in as an option, and many of the dirty plants that don't have pollution controls are scheduled to be retired. I don't think we're going to see licenses extended on existing old nuclear plants after Fukushima, and so we're going to see the need for a lot more power in this country, and solar is becoming a cost-effective option.
Thank you, Dan. That's the panel that we have ready to answer questions, so if the call operator would please go ahead and take questions from the group. We'd love to field them.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, to ask a question, it's star and one on your touch-tone phone. I'll pause momentarily to allow questions to enter the queue. Looks like we have a question from the side of Alex Gielen with Politico. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Here in Washington, Solyndra is in the headlines practically every day. But out in the industry, when you're meeting with customers and at the conference that you're at right now, is Solyndra something that people talk about a lot, and does it worry them?
This is Danny Kennedy from Sungevity. I can tell you that we haven't had it come up with our consumers. You know, we were in a call center of about 50 sales folk talking to consumers in 8 states, and it really hasn't deterred our sales. In fact, we're on track for a record month. Sold 2 megawatts last month and doing great. There's also been some focus groups done by E2, the environmental entrepreneurs in Florida and some other states, which basically showed that consumers aren't kind of believing it, but don't think that the failure of one company is the failure of an industry. When Netscape went down, it didn't mean the internet wasn't going to be big. So, no, I don't think so. And you know, from our sort of other side of the business, attracting finance, we just scored a $50 million deal with Rabobank, who are a new entrant into the U.S. residential leasing space, this whole growth sector that Lynn talked about. You know, for Rabobank, one of the very fine Dutch conservative institutions, you know, the last AAA-rated top 30 bank in the world to get into the game, suggests a level of confidence that is belied by the nonsense on the Hill that you have to cover.
I think it's important to contextualize. This is Dan Sugar speaking. So Solyndra was about 5%, accounted for about 5% of the U.S. manufacturing shipments and less than 0.2% of global shipments. So they were a really small player out there. And so it's, anyway, you know, it's an issue because the president went there, so it's become a campaign issue. But, you know, in terms of the industry, you know, it was too bad, but not really material.
Yeah, this is Arno Harris. I think the only point I'd echo is that I think there's really wide recognition that Solyndra's failure is really precisely because, you know, conventional silicon-based solar panels are doing so well. The cost reductions I talked about earlier, you know, over 70% since 2008, you know, really made it difficult for Solyndra to introduce their technology, which, you know, they were trying to sell at $2 a watt in a world that's, you know, rapidly approaching $1 a watt. And, you know, I think the other thing I'd say is, from our standpoint, we're in the market now, actively pursuing about $700 million worth of project financing. And, you know, I think similar to Danny's experience, you know, we're not seeing any slowdown in the interest of either lenders or investors because of the Solyndra event. I think everybody recognizes that it's, you know, more about Solyndra and their technology than it says about the attractiveness of solar and the growth that we're seeing.
We have a question from the side of Andrew Restucia with The Hill.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for doing this call. I wonder if any of you could address this trade action that's expected to come out later today. I guess my main question is, are other companies planning to join in on this? And if not, maybe more broadly, what do you think the impact of this could be?
This is Julie London from SunPower, and the answer is no, we don't plan to join, and we think that it's an unfortunate distraction from the efforts to work together to expand the opportunity for solar.
This is Arno. We don't see anybody else other than SolarWorld. It looks to me like it's just one struggling manufacturer trying to, you know, use trade barriers to, you know, prop up the market for themselves. And I agree with Julie. I think it's a really unproductive step, and one that is just at odds with what the goal of the industry, you know, broadly should be, which is to reduce cost, increase demand, and make solar, you know, a mainstream part of conventional energy markets.
Our next question comes from the site of Zachary Tracer with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for holding this call. This question is for the solar leasing companies. you know, Syngevity, Sunrun, SolarCity. I noticed you all don't operate in some of the states that I would think of as having a lot of sunlight, essentially. So, like Texas, New Mexico, Florida, for instance. Could you talk a little bit about why that is and what would make it make sense for you to enter into some of those states?
Sure. This is Lyndon from SolarCity. When looking at a state, there's three main ingredients that we look at. The first ingredient is how much sunlight that state has. The second is what's the current cost of energy. And then the third is what's the local incentive program. We look at those three. If one is weak, the other has to be stronger. So let's say there's not much sun, then you have to have higher cost of electricity or higher rebate program. If there's a lot of sun and high cost of electricity, those are in most cases the best markets to move in, as that would be the first market that can survive without incentives. In places specifically like Florida that you mentioned, there's some legislative challenges that we face, as Florida does not allow third-party owned systems. And we sometimes run across these challenges where utilities will not allow a third party to come in, own and operate a small power producing asset, and sell electricity. So we have to overcome that barrier first, and then look at the three ingredients to see if it's feasible.
The only color I'd add to that, thanks, Lyndon, this is Danny from Syngevity again, is that, base electricity cost is this big determinant, and, from an arbiter of the government, the National Renewable Energy Lab suggests that by 2015, 66% of people in America will be paying higher electricity rates than we'll be able to sell from solar electricity. So in other words, because their grid electricity prices keep going up through time, that's been all of our historic experience and will continue to be the case, our cost of electricity will be less than that of two-thirds of Americans, so it'll be most states.
Agreed, and this is Lynn from Sunrun, and, just as a proof point that, as the industry gets scale economies, we can install at a much lower cost. You can look at a market like Germany where, not including subsidies at all, so the gross cost of the system, to install on a rooftop there, it's about 40% less cost than in the U.S., and a lot of that, again, is due to simple permitting, like I talked about earlier, as well as other kind of process and scale economies that they've achieved from having more volume. And as we match that level, we'll be able to undercut, traditional power prices in more and more states. Moving outside of our, 10 to 15 states that we service now into, 20 to 25 new markets.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the site of Cindy Zimmerman with DomesticFuel.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. In light of the Solyndra situation, do you think that this will impact government support for solar development, these kinds of grants and loan guarantees? And really, how important do you think that is if you're so optimistic about the industry at this point?
It's Arno Harris with Recurrent Energy. I think the Solyndra, issue has certainly stimulated a lot of discussion about the role of government in and policy in our industry. But I think there's a clear understanding that there are sort of different types of policies out there, and those policies have different functions. I think on the one end you have policies like the Loan Guarantee Program, which is now expired, which is really targeted at encouraging innovative new technologies development through, manufacturing facilities and initial commercial market entry of new technologies through some project support. And then I think you have more mainstream programs like the Investment Tax Credit, which is really about helping very mature technologies compete in a market against heavily subsidized fossil fuels. It really is a subsidy or an incentive that effectively levels the playing field against a heavily subsidized
conventional fuels. And I think there's broad understanding that those are different policies and have different types of risks. And I think there's an understanding that the loan guarantee program in backing specific companies, specific technologies, really was very different. We're not seeing, I think, an erosion of support for those more mainstream policies that I think are key to driving solar success.
My answer to the question, this is Danny from Sundevity, is that I think this Solyndra stuff goes away because it can only last so long, even in the echo chamber of media and politics in Washington, D.C. The issue is jobs. We all know that. You watched the presidential debate last night. That's all they were talking about, jobs, jobs, jobs. We create jobs. That's the story of solar. It's not about optimism. It's about facts. The economy is not creating jobs, and the sectors that are will get the joy over 2012. So I think the political interest in solar has to be impinged on what's important to the American people, and even politicians will understand that soon enough. So they'll start to do what we need. This is, I think, the currency of the industry. That's why Solar Power International was launched by Roan Resch, the head of the Solar Energy Industry Association, calling for an extension of 1603, the cash grant, because to do otherwise is effectively like taxing our industry right in the period of, booming job creation. Just come back to that number. We're 100,000 strong now. We're bigger than the coal mining sector. We're bigger than the steel production industry. Those jobs can't be ignored, and we're going to continue to grow them because we're still only 1% of the electricity sector. We're going to grow to at least double-digit percentage points. That's going to be many hundreds of thousands of jobs more created in this country, and politicians better get with the program.
Mr. Lennon, I'm going to add some additional comment to that. When looking at the fossil fuel industry, it's been heavily subsidized for over 100 years. The challenge and the difference between the solar industry and the fossil fuel industry is that the subsidy, for the most part, goes to the end user, to the business or to the homeowner. So it's advertised, everybody knows about it, it's front and center. In the fossil fuel industry, the subsidy goes to the power producing companies, so to the utility. So it's hidden. It's not advertised. It'll be a shame for our political leaders to look at this and start saying, stop supporting the growth of renewable energy, as they have been supporting the growth of power producing assets that are dirty for the last 100 years, and most of them don't know to what level. To keep things in a fair playing field, the true answer should be, stop all subsidies for fossil fuels, continue subsidizing renewable energy for the next 100 years, and then stop it. Of course, that won't happen, but that's a true fair playing field.
We have a question from the side of Stephen Lacey with Climate Progress. Please go ahead.
Hi, all. I know people are very optimistic on this call, and I know Danny said that he thinks that the politics around Solyndra and around Solyndra go away eventually. But what we saw over the last couple of years coming out of the hacking of the East Anglia emails and the ClimateGate scandal is that the political implications of that scandal, which were proven to be false, are still with us today, and it is now a mainstream talking point among certain political leaders to deny the science of climate change. And I'm wondering if anyone on this call sees some of these specious attacks against solar as symptomatic of that greater problem and potentially snowballing into a problem that is just as large. And so I'm wondering what folks in the solar industry are doing to try to combat that beyond something like a conference call like this. Is that something that people are concerned about?
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This is Julie Blunden. Thanks for the question, Steve, and definitely appreciate the role that you're playing in making sure that accurate information is flowing out through all kinds of different channels. I think one of the most important things to recognize is that solar is something that people can touch and feel, that they can invest in directly, that their friends and neighbors see on each other's houses. And increasingly, over the next year, you're going to be able to see ground-mounted systems deployed as power plants. The concrete nature of the solar business and the expanse of the 100,000 jobs per the CS study is sufficient enough that I think our job is to ensure that the reality, the real visible reality of solar deployment and solar savings has made it out in the media and other channels to the extent possible. For example, if you look at in California, the public sector savings from solar, these are real schools, real water districts, real local governments that are saving money today, will in aggregate through the California Solar Initiative period save $2.5 billion for the public sector in California. That's saving teacher jobs, and it's reducing rate increases at water districts, for example. Those are real effects. We need to make sure that those stories are told, that the testimonials of workers who have been pulled off unemployment to be able to build new systems, schools, power plants, or otherwise, and the growth of the jobs that, for example, Lyndon referred to, are out very visibly. That's what we have going for us. We have a phenomenal, phenomenal base of data and visual impact for what we're doing, for how much we're saving, and for the consequences of economic development. I think one of the things that SEIA has invested in just in the last 6 months is a completely new level of campaign for communication. And we very much appreciate the folks on this call participating in the effort to ensure that all the good news is making it out more broadly to the political base, to the industrial base, and to the general public, who can recognize that solar really is active and working for America today.
Stephen, this is Danny, just to respond directly to your concern about my naivete. I'm not trying to be naive about this. I'm not trying to pretend we don't have to fight to make our case and present the fact that we're a job-creating machine to this economy and these politicians. I think it's a bit different to the ClimateGate scandal, which is something to do with religion as much as rationality. And the bottom line is that in 2012, an election year in a recession, or whatever we're going through right now, a prolonged near recession, jobs are the sort of facts that are stubborn things that will out, you know, and we are going to see a lot more interest in jobs if you look at the direction the president is trying to take the presidential debate and his jobs tour of the Southeast. It's all about jobs. And, you know, again, just got to come back to the fact we're the guys creating the jobs. The numbers are clear and the rest of the economy is not. So, as Julie says, there are real things on the ground and, more importantly, real humans who vote, who are touched, who have families, who care, that are employed by the solar industry, and increasingly so. And that's going to have to curry the support of politicians of all stripes.
Yeah, this is Dan Sugar. But I think, you know, the meta point is we've got to do more. And this call is one of, you know, a lot of things we're doing. I think it is, you know, really one of the major areas of focus for the industry is to get, there's a lot of, you know, competing interests that are actively spreading disinformation regarding this and other topics. What's interesting is if you poll folks, irrespective of where they live or what political party they're affiliated with, people overwhelmingly want their power to come from the sun. What historically folks weren't sure it works, well now, you know, it really does, and we've got a lot of great evidence of that. And you know, the great news is on both the residential and commercial systems, the costs are now competitive. And so, you know, essentially between that and the jobs piece, you know, it's we need to really redouble our efforts to get our message out. And that's why we appreciate your help so much.
And it appears we have no further questions at this time.